Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Hi, and how are you today? Wow, it's been a big full week full of lots of fun food, and I'm going to be telling you about some of that in a little bit, and some wonderful events that have been going on. There's all kinds of really lovely, inspiring activity. So we'll be talking about that in a moment. But let's bring on my guest, and because I'm really looking forward to talking to her. Lorelei Wakefield is a vegan veterinarian and founder of Veterinary Concierge Care, which provides private VIP home care for NYC's beloved dogs and cats. She also runs Wakefield Vet, a consultation service for nonprofit groups as well as individual animal caregivers needing advice outside New York City. She's an expert in vegan dog and cat nutrition, as seen on Animal Planet in Cat Fancy magazine and the Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Dr. Wakefield works regularly with the ASPCA and volunteers to advocate for farm animal rights. Sounds pretty good to me. How are you, Lorelei?
Hi, Karen. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Now, you've been really busy, and I'm glad you're taking a moment to talk with me.
I'm happy to be on.
Yeah. So tell me what's going on in your veterinarian life that's keeping you so busy.
Well, I do a few things right now. I have the veterinary concierge care, private home care for pets, so I've been doing that. I also do relief work at the ASPCA. And I work with some nonprofits as well.
You know, veterinary, I have to be very careful when I say that. I always want to leave out a few syllables.
You wouldn't be the only one.
Veterinarian. Okay. I'm going to be very careful with that. I am not a dog or cat kind of person. We don't have any companion animals here. One reason is because the building doesn't allow them. That doesn't stop a lot of people from having them in our building, but we're not supposed to have them. But I am a person who believes that all sentient beings should live a life that they want to live based on their own design, free of exploitation and lots of wonderful care. So how is it that you decided you wanted to take care of animals?
I've always loved animals, and I've been vegetarian since 97 and vegan since 99, and I was sorting out what to do with my life, and I had always had some interest in science, and I thought, you know, I love animals. I have such a strong interest in animal rights and welfare, and since I had been vegan, my allergies actually went away. I grew up with really terrible allergies to dogs and cats and kind of everything else. And as a wonderful side effect of becoming vegan, I had no more allergies. So suddenly it was actually a possibility for me to be a vet. So I ended up going to vet school.
That's nice. And that's such an important point. People don't connect those dots, but a lot of foods, like milk, for example, can cause allergies. They inflame our nasal passages, and that makes us more sensitive to responding to other things that can aggravate it even more.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then when you take that away, all of a sudden you're not as sensitive to these other things, like pollen or pet hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wonderful. I'm glad that happened to you so that you were able to do what you were meant to do in life. I'm wondering about your training as a veterinarian. And I know that with medical doctors for humans, I want to assume that most, if not all, of those people go to train because they want to do good. They want to help people. And then something happens when they go to school, when they get involved in business, and when capitalism kind of takes over, and when laws take over, and administration take over, and all kinds of, and misinformation takes over, and things get kind of messy, and a lot of physicians, we don't trust them, and they don't know really the best care for us. There's a lot of things that go on. Is it similar with veterinarians?
I'm going to say I believe there's a huge difference. You have to really love animals to become a veterinarian, because it is sadly not as lucrative as people think it is. In fact, they just did a wonderful study in the AVMA, American Veterinary Medical Association's journal, about the return on investment of becoming a veterinarian. So currently, a veterinarian goes to undergrad for 4 years, typically, and to veterinary school for 4 years, and some people also do a year internship and a residency. Average debt for veterinarians right now is $130,000, and so they found out that a woman who goes to veterinary school, the return on investment over a lifetime, over had she just done a four-year undergrad degree, is negative $40,000. I believe. And for men, it's something like positive 70. So,
wow, yeah, there you go.
It's not, people do it because they love animals. And I know we wish that veterinary costs were less expensive, but I promise you, your vet is not in it just for the money, because there's not that much money in it.
Well, there's a range of types of veterinarians, and my guess is that those who are part of the animal agriculture business might do a little better.
That's hard to say. Yeah, there have been different studies. I think a lot of the time it depends on exactly what part of animal agriculture they may be in. A lot of times small animal vets come out making more money than the agriculture vets, but still, that doesn't preclude the fact that decisions are made based on finances and not always on animal welfare in those fields.
Okay. You're a vegan, and I love that. Mm-hmm. That makes total sense to me. There are veterinarians that, as I mentioned, are involved in animal agriculture and are involved with the exploitation and slaughter of animals. So were you involved with students, and are you familiar with veterinarians who do that, that were interested in going along that way? I would think, like a doctor, you want to save your patient's life and keep them healthy, but there are some that are actually in a business to protect animals until it's time to kill them. That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Sure. It is kind of weird to someone who's vegan or vegetarian. I did go to school and know some of those people, and I've met some really wonderful people who go into animal agriculture. And it's just, you know, we're all raised differently, and if you're raised on a farm thinking that that's just how things are and how things should be, I know some animal agriculture vets who really try their hardest to make the animals as comfortable as they can during their brief lives. There are others that I've heard about and read about that I don't know personally that seem to be making a lot of decisions that are not really, absolutely not in the animal's best interest. And they're kind of placed in a tight squeeze point because their clients are farmers. These farmers make money off of the slaughter of animals or using animals for milk or whatnot. It's a tough position to be in for them to turn around and say, well, you know, Mr. Farmer, you're doing things completely wrong, and to ask them to change what they're doing might be a $1 million proposition.
Yeah, so it all comes down to money,
doesn't
it?
It's a lot of economics. It's not as simple as we'd like it to be.
Yeah.
That's why this consumer push has been so important, to say we're not going to buy pork from pigs that were raised in gestation crates. We're not going to buy eggs that were from hens in battery cages.
Let's talk about dogs and cats and the happy side. So you are an expert in vegan dog and cat nutrition. And right when I say that, I'm sure there are hairs going up on people saying, wait a minute, you're going to make your dogs and cats vegan? Tell me about dogs and cats, and can they be vegan, and should they be vegan, and how do you do it?
Sure. Dogs and cats can be vegan. They certainly can, because I've seen healthy vegan dogs and healthy vegan cats. The caveat is that cats are actually obligate carnivores. So by making them vegan, it does go against their natural system, and it's very tricky. And some cats I have seen thrive and do wonderfully on a commercially prepared vegan diet that's formulated to meet their nutritional needs. But other cats don't do so well on a vegan diet and need to either go back to a conventional meat-based diet, or some can get by on some sort of mix, which is what I recommend for people who want to give their cats vegan food, is to do a mix of here's some meat food and here's some vegan food, and that percentage will vary depending on what the cat can handle. Right now, I don't think there is a cat food that is vegan and formulated that is safe enough to be their only diet. That's not to say I'm against it. If someone wants to do it, I will support them and help them running the right blood tests and urine tests to make sure their cat's healthy. So it is a little bit tricky. Dogs, on the other hand, they're technically carnivores. They're in the order Carnivora. But when it comes to their physiology, they're more like us. They're more omnivorous. So dogs can really thrive on a vegan diet, and it's not so controversial. I would say at least 50% of vets would agree with me that dogs can be vegetarian and probably can be vegan and be quite healthy. And they've done studies in India, too, where a large percentage of the population has been vegetarian for centuries. And those dogs thrive. They do wonderfully. I want to say one more thing about the cats. This is an issue where, okay, so if you really want to feed your cat vegan food, that is someone's personal choice, and I will support them and the cat as best as I can, because in the end, we're saying this cat's health may not be 100% optimal. Maybe it will be, but we are saving how many chickens and how many cows. We're saving their lives completely. So in my mind, I can understand that argument.
Now, it must be harder to transition an older cat rather than starting a kitten on a plant diet. Is that true?
It's a little bit easier to start a kitten, but I will say these new vegan cat foods that they have are really highly palatable. There's one, it's called AmiCat, AmiCat, and it's a dry food that I've seen cats go crazy for. Cats who have a bowl of regular meat food and a bowl of the AmiCat food, and I'm not getting any money for saying this.
Wow.
But they love that AmiCat food.
What's in it that they love so much? Do you know?
I don't know what the exact ingredient is. That's the thing that they go for. But there are foods out there that make it a lot easier for you to transition a pet at any age.
Now, what about feeding dogs and cats real food, foods that you make at home?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good choice?
That can be an excellent choice when it's done carefully. If you were feeding an omnivorous diet, it might be a little bit more simple to get all their nutrients met. For cats, if you're feeding a cat a vegan diet, you'd be a lot safer using a commercially prepared food, because it's very tricky to get their exact nutrient requirements met on that diet. But for dogs, you could feed them something like V-Dog formulated food, and then you can add things like some carrots or apples or some green beans, and those sort of things can be a very nutritious component of their diet.
Now, we've heard all kinds of crazy things, just like with human food, all the horrible ingredients that are put in them, and I imagine it's worse with a lot of commercial dog and cat foods, that all the stuff they wouldn't feed humans, they try and sell to dogs and cats. So are there things people should look out for?
Yeah, that's a great point. So, of course, they put byproducts in the conventional meat food. So that means, like, hair and weird organs and stuff that we would never eat can end up in pet food. And that's a wonderful reason to choose vegan food for your pet, because you're avoiding those byproducts. You're avoiding things like antibiotics and hormones that they feed the farm animals that end up being slaughtered for consumption.
Oh, you know, I never even thought about that. So
yeah.
They don't directly add it to the food, but it's in the animals because they've consumed it.
Exactly.
Wow. Has anybody done any studies on that?
Not in the animal realm, as far as I know.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that. That's a good one. Oh, we live in such a crazy world, don't we?
Yes.
Do you have any good cat or dog stories, taking care of any, or when something really lovely happened?
Sure. I have a friend, you won't mind if I mention him and his dog. His name is Todd Emco, and he runs Darwin Animal Doctors. He has a dog named Piggy, and Piggy is a vegan dog, and he was found after being in an accident, and he had very severe damage to one of his hind legs, and he needed to have it amputated. He was called Piggy because he was missing most of his fur, and he was adopted by Todd. He was placed on a vegan diet, and he ended up healing incredibly fast. The vets were amazed, and his fur regrew. Now he has a gorgeous coat. He's a lovely dog, and he's this fashion model for various fur dog clothes and that sort of thing. So he has a gorgeous coat, and it's just wonderful to see the positive effects of a vegan diet on a dog.
Now, are there foods that shouldn't be given to dogs and cats? Occasionally I see some posts that said, did you know you shouldn't be giving your dogs this and that? And people are like, no, I didn't know.
Yeah. One thing that's come out in the past few years but not everyone knows about is grapes and raisins are toxic to dogs and cats. We're not sure, but avocados may be toxic, so we recommend avoiding that and also avoiding most nuts.
Avoiding what?
Most nuts, avoiding that. Chocolate, pretty much everyone knows, is toxic, and also we recommend avoiding onions and garlic.
Now, what happens if they eat grapes and raisins, if the dogs eat grapes and raisins?
It can cause damage to the internal organs.
Wow.
Sometimes to the kidneys, which lands them in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. And dogs don't know that they shouldn't eat those foods.
No, they have no idea. They think they taste delicious.
Yeah. Oh, that's very sad. All right. Tell me about Wakefield Vet. Now, you said you have this concierge care for private VIP home care, but what happens at Wakefield Vet?
I've been consulting with organizations. For instance, I've helped write protocols for treatment of dogs in large-scale dog-fighting cruelty cases. So I'll do that sort of thing, or help write protocols to assist people who have an issue with animal hoarding. And then on an individual scale, I've been able to do consults by phone or Skype with people who want to transition their pets to a vegan or vegetarian diet, because most vets are really, it's so controversial, most vets are not really open to that. And not only am I open to it and also supportive, especially in the case of dogs and vegan diets, but I know what to recommend for follow-up care as far as regular blood tests and urine tests. So I offer that service.
Do you have dogs and cats at home?
Yes, I currently have one foster cat who is probably going to be adopted very soon.
That's
Gwyneth.
That's always tough, right?
What's that?
That's always tough, right? You kind of like fall in love with them and then they go.
I've had so much fun fostering a bunch of cats and kittens, and now I've just fallen in love, so I think I'll be keeping her.
That's nice. Are there things that we should know more about dogs and cats that people just take for granted and don't know or don't assume? Anything you found in working with them that would help all of us? It's a broad question.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I'd say on the behavioral side of things, if you notice your pet is engaged in behaviors that you don't want them to do, something that really helps is just to give them more stimulation. So something that just means more love and attention, or for indoor cats, it might mean more playtime or more toys, and safe toys. And for dogs, it might mean longer walks or more time to run around off-leash in a dog park or that sort of thing. So that can really help if you're having behavioral issues. And then medically, there's a lot, but basically feeding your pet the highest quality food you can afford makes a big difference. You know, if we ate McDonald's every day, we wouldn't be very healthy. But if we ate at Whole Foods every day, we're probably doing a lot better. So if you can afford higher quality food for your pet, it's going to make a big difference in the long run.
I think those two points apply to humans as well as cats and dogs.
I think you're right.
Yeah, we could all use going for more playtime and long walks and more attention from those we care about, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can learn so much. What about, now I'm kind of fascinated by all the species that are on this planet, and, you know, I don't know why we're here, and I don't think anybody does, but sometimes I think that each species has some really unique and wonderful characteristics that we can all benefit from and learn from. What do you think those characteristics are that are really special in dogs and cats that we don't have?
I'll tell you a story about my foster cat. And it's about their ability to be really present in the moment, which Eckhart Tolle has written about. And so this cat, unfortunately my story today about animals with amputations, well, she also had an incident where she was attacked by a dog and had really severe damage to her hind leg that wasn't repairable. So she ended up having a hind limb amputation a few weeks ago. And I fostered her so she could recover from that until she was ready for adoption and learn how to walk on three legs. Mm. What was amazing to me is I met her maybe 3 to 5 days after she had the surgery. And all she wanted was love and attention, and she'd just look at me and purr.
Mm.
And she never seems to think about that leg. She never acts like she's in pain. She just has moved on with her life. Every now and then, I'll see her in this funny position, like she's trying to scratch her ear with a leg that's no longer there, and that's the one pathetic thing she'll do. But then she realizes that she can use her front paw to scratch it, and she's fine.
Oh, wow.
But it's just so amazing. You know, if that were a person, we would be traumatized.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Accept and move on.
She is just moving on, and it's such a beautiful thing for me to see.
What do you
think? Really in the moment.
Yeah, we all, we're not good at that, are we? Being in the moment and accepting what is and moving on. Yeah, something we need to remind ourselves.
They're very good at that, and they're excellent teachers.
Right. Now, what about breeding of cats and dogs? Mm-hmm. Do you have an opinion on that?
Sure. I think it's unsurprising that I'm not for breeding cats and dogs when we have this overpopulation crisis and then there's not enough room in our shelters and millions are getting put down every year, and it's so sad. So I know that people like having certain breeds because they're lovely, and certainly certain breeds are just so wonderful, but I just can't justify that, you know, to breed more pets
right
when we have too many. But there are breed rescues, which is a wonderful alternative.
But isn't breeding unhealthy for the future animals?
It can be unhealthy, certainly. people are, right now, one thing I see is people want these tiny dogs, so they're breeding the little dogs, and they have trouble. They're just, they've been so genetically altered over the years and with these specific breedings that there are certain breeds that can't even give birth naturally and end up having to do C-sections on these poor dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot for them to go through. They don't understand.
Well, we don't know what they think, if they understand or not.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Who knows? Well, I'm not even going to say. Now, what about, there's a lot of, unfortunately, animal experimentation, vivisection, and I've read some of the benefits of that for animals is that we really know how to treat and take care of an animal, cat or dog, better than humans because we've done so many awful experiments on them.
That may be true, but certainly I would give back those few things that we've learned in exchange for not having done the experiments.
Yeah. It's a terrible thing.
There's a lot of art to medicine, and we like to look at scientific studies. But as we've seen in human medicine, studies may tell us one thing 1 year, and 10 years later, the complete opposite.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? I mean, we're hearing that all the time. And one of my favorite studies, I think it was, came out a couple of years ago where they talked about no matter how objective we try to be, and I'm not saying that a lot of these people who do studies are objective. Usually they want a certain outcome. But even when we try to be objective, there's something that goes on within us that still adds a certain amount of subjectivity to the results. And then it's hard to repeat those results later on. It's just fascinating how things change.
The observer bias.
Yeah, things that you would never even know were there are there. Yeah. Whew. Okay. So what's on your horizon coming up with dogs and cats?
Well, the main thing coming up is I'm working on the veterinary concierge care, which is a private home care for pets, and that's fun. I'm working with some vets that I've known for years from the ASPCA and some technicians from there, too, as well as the behaviorists. So that's exciting because what I will tell you, whether you're in New York City or not, is having a vet come to your home is so nice for not only you, but the pets are just so much more relaxed at home. And, of course, that makes sense because they probably associate some negative things with the veterinary hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice service to offer.
So this concierge care, how does that work? Are people welcoming other people's dogs and cats into their home?
No, it's what it is that a veterinarian comes to your home or hotel or office to examine your pet there. So it's just the veterinarian and a technician if needed, and you and your pet, or companion animal, I should say more accurately.
Mm. Let's bring back house visits for everyone, shall we?
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be nice to have a doctor come to your home when you don't feel like getting out of bed?
And that's what they used to do. So this that same thing. When your pet is sick, the last thing they want to do is go for a cab ride.
Right. Yeah, that's nice. Very nice. Okay. Well, Lorelei, it's been delightful talking to you and so lovely to hear what you're doing for dogs and cats. And the planet.
Thank you, Karen. It's been so nice talking with you, too.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you. And I learned a few things, too.
Good.
I'm going to check out that Ami cat. I don't have cats, but from my friends who have cats, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Okay, thanks for joining me. All the best.
Okay, you too.
Okay. Bye. Well, that was Lorelei Wakefield, a veterinarian who is vegan and an expert in a lot of vegan and dog and cat issues, including nutrition. Now we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. time for the second part of It's All About Food. And here you are with me. Thank you so much for joining me and listening and caring about my favorite subject, food, because it is all about food. And every time I turn and look and think about something and try and see how it's not connected to food, I always find a connection to food, because it's all about food. I want to bring up some things that are going on, some events, some things you might be interested in. So every year, Responsible Eating and Living, my nonprofit, has been supporting the Compassion Over Killing U.S. Veg Week. And that goes on during the week of Earth Day, which is coming up later this month. So if you go to usvegweek.com, you can find out more about what goes on during U.S. Veg Week. But it's a great opportunity for people who are not vegetarian to choose vegetarian foods just during this week, the week of Earth Day. And they have a nice program. If you register and you take their 7-day veg pledge and you get to be part of a bigger community of lawmakers and celebrities that agree to sign up, and you get a bunch of nice resources, coupons, recipes, opportunities to win some prizes, and it's a nice little kick in the butt for you if you've been thinking of improving your diet and just needed one more little reason to do it. You might join the U.S. Veg Week kickoff for the Earth Day Week Veg Pledge, right? Very good. There's that. And another thing I wanted to mention, I think this is the fourth year. Are you familiar with the Food Revolution? That's an organization that was created by John Robbins and Ocean Robbins. And they have a Food Revolution Summit every year, and it's coming up later this month. I think it's, let me check. It's around the 25th of April, I think, and it's an opportunity to hear John Robbins interview some really great people in the food movement, and you can listen to all of it free during April 25th to May 3rd, and then afterwards you have an opportunity, if you want to keep all of these interviews, you can make a purchase. But if you want to know more about it, just go to my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. You can scroll down on the right side till you see Food Revolution Summit. The one special thing about this is John Robbins. He's just amazing to listen to. And sometimes I think he's linked somehow to the greater universe, somehow the way he channels things when he speaks. And I am actually very fortunate in that after the Food Revolution Summit, later in May, I will be joining John and Ocean, and we will be doing a 6-week online course helping people along to make better food choices and give you all kinds of wonderful, empowering tips to prepare food and choose different foods during your journey, everyday life, etc. And we did this back in October, and we're doing it again in May and June. And I'll let you know more about it later in the month. But it was such a great experience. It was a great experience for me. Now, I was part of the course, but just to participate and hear what these two wonderful people had to offer and share was invaluable. So you might want to check out the Food Revolution Summit. And again, that's go to responsibleeatingandliving.com, my website. Scroll down on the right side, and you'll find a little picture for the Food Revolution Summit, and that will take you there. What else do I need to tell you about? So you know we are having an event as well. It's my birthday party on April 22nd. What are you doing on Earth Day? How are you celebrating the Earth? Of course, I think every day should be Earth Day. It's our home, right, and we should be taking care of it. And one day really quite isn't enough, but at least on that one day we can make a big splash and think about how we can do better in the following year. Well, Responsible Eating and Living is having a fundraising event. It's my birthday party, and I really would hope that you check it out if you're in the New York metro area. I would love to meet you and see you. It's going to be a lot of fun. Go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. Again, you'll find it on our website. It's pretty much at the top, the It's a turquoise little picture called the Happy Birthday Review. And you'll get to meet the Swing Gourmets because they're going to be singing at that event. Another thing I wanted to talk about is an event that I just went to last night, which was amazing. So my partner Gary and I contributed 3 recipes to the new Farm Sanctuary book called Living the Farm Sanctuary Life. It's written by Jean Barr, the co-founder of Farm Sanctuary, along with Jean Stone. You may recognize those names. I've had them both on the show, and Jean Barr will be back in May to talk about this book as well. He was also on Jon Stewart last night. I don't know if you caught that. So we were at this event for the book launch because it was released yesterday. And the one thing that really stood out for me, for somebody who's been vegan now for over 26 years, it was so inspiring to see how far we've come. So it was a lovely event at ABC Home, and I don't know if you've ever been to this store in Manhattan. There's nothing in there that I could possibly afford, but it's a beautiful store of all kinds of creative, crafty, lovely, different things. And they're very generous with their space for good causes, and this event was there. So I just want to name some of the people that were there, and I will be bringing them on the program soon if they haven't been on the program. So Joshua Katcher, are you familiar with him? He's the discerning brute, and one of the things he's working on is compassionate, cruelty-free fashion wear for men. And that's something that there isn't a lot of. You know, most men, when they choose a suit, it'll often be made of wool or silk, and there aren't many fashionable items that are made of cruelty-free textiles, and if they are, they're very expensive. So that's an area that needs development. And we spent some time with Jane Velez Mitchell. Are you familiar with her? She's a huge animal rights activist, and she had a show for a while on CNN, and now she's working on a new project that will be on the World Wide Web, Jane Unchained, and I'll be speaking with her next week. Very exciting. Do you remember MASH? So Loretta Swit, who used to play Hot Lips Houlihan, she was there, and she shared some of her experiences as an animal rights activist. It was really exciting to see her there. Some other people, Sharon Gannon of Jiva Mukti, I spoke to her a while ago. She has a lovely, joyful cookbook out. And it was really just great to be a part of that. Now, I want to get to the fun part, and that is talking about food. Good food, delicious food. Now, this week, there were 2 holidays that I know of. There was the Jewish holiday of Passover and the Christian holiday of Easter, and I think it's really, really considerate that these big holidays fall on the same week. And I'm not really into following the religious part of the holidays, the protocols. All I'm interested in is the food and making the favorite foods vegan and delicious. We had so much fun, and it was something that really just came together and we didn't plan. Now, I may have mentioned it last week, but I've been working on and fine-tuning my gefilte fish recipe, and I got to eat it all this week. It's an almond-based recipe. It's really simple. What was really fun this time is I made a jelly or an aspic that went with the gefilte fish. If you're familiar with this Jewish fish dish, very often if you don't make it yourself, you buy it in a jar in a store, and it's in this kind of, it's not really attractive, but it's kind of this slimy jelly thing, and it forms from the fat from the animal that you've prepared the dish from. So I use a sea vegetable agar to make the gel. And it was tricky to get the right consistency, not too hard, not too soft. And I finally made it and jarred my fish, which is the seasoned almond-based pieces, made to look like the gefilte fish, which is a combination of white fishes or carp. I'm not even familiar with the fishes that are used anymore because I haven't eaten it in forever. But it was so good. Taking it out of the jar with the jelly, the flavor really got enhanced over time. I'm so excited about that recipe. And we had just a wonderful Passover. Now, one of the famous dishes with in the Jewish tradition is something called brisket, which is a beef that is marinated, and it becomes really, really soft and tender, and people just go nuts over it. Well, I haven't had that in a really long time, and I'm not really interested in it, but Gary made two wonderful brisket-like dishes. One was with mushrooms, and one was with tempeh, and genius. They were so good, with really flavorful sauces. And, you know, it's all about the sauce. I am more and more convinced about food and how to make things tasty. When you have a wonderful sauce, and you can have a wonderful sauce that's entirely plant-based, it can make, it can bring so much elegance, not only flavor, but elegance, if it's plated in a certain way. Or it can bring a certain degree of comfort. You know, a lot of comfort food has rich sauces and gravies. And that's why we started with our Transition Kitchen program. We've done three of them now. And we've done three out of the five French mother sauces. These are the base kinds of sauces in the French culinary canon, and you can build upon them to make so many others. They're not hard to make. Hollandaise, velouté, espagnol, bechamel, and tomato. And you can start with these and then season them up and make so many different wonderful, flavorful dishes from plants. You don't need the meat. You just need the sauce. So we had some wonderful espagnol sauce and variations on it to make this briskety kind of dish. Wonderful. Well, then it was time to, oh, no, one more thing. I made a chocolate flourless cake. So I'm not really that concerned with the traditions of Passover, but one of the things you're not supposed to do is eat leavened bread, wheat. There's a whole long list of foods that you're not supposed to eat. So I was trying to think, okay, what can I make for dessert that kind of fits the Passover rules and vegan and gluten-free? And I found this wonderful recipe in the Vegan Holiday Cooking from Candle Cafe, a chocolate flourless cake. And I made it, and it was so good. And now I can't wait to make all kinds of variations on it because it was really very easy and lovely. So I'm very excited about these chocolate flourless cake. I'm going to post my recipe on that pretty soon. I haven't gotten to it yet, but look for it. And then Easter came along just a couple of days later. And I have to say that I was blown away with the dishes that my partner Gary created for Easter. I had no idea what he was doing. He was working in the kitchen for hours. I asked if I could help, and one of the things he asked me to do was to make a cannoli shell. And because I tend to make all the desserts in the family, and the funny thing is I never made a cannoli before. So, okay, I'm going to make a cannoli shell, and not only that, I'm going to make it vegan, and I'm going to make it gluten-free. And it was fun just downloading different recipes and seeing how people made them. Oh, and I also, if you've ever had a cannoli, which is a pastry tube, and it's filled with a rich, usually a sweetened ricotta cream, I grew up on these, and they were just so incredibly delicious. And sometimes you can get little pieces of chocolate chips and cherries in them. And just a wonderful dessert that I haven't had in a million years. Well, I came up with a recipe that isn't deep fried because I don't like deep frying things. So I made a baked cannoli shell, and it's vegan and gluten-free, and it was wonderful. It was so much fun making it. It was really wasn't difficult. And then Gary made this beautiful filling. So we ended up having this incredible Easter dinner. And
just amazing what you can do with plant food. So that's just one of the things that we want to put out there to the universe, that this kind of eating is not only good for you, but it can be, if you put in the time and effort, it can be elegant, it can be beautiful, stunning, satisfying. The first dish he made is something we're calling a musanya. We made it up. It's a combination of moussaka and lasagna, and the tomato sauce was seasoned with Middle Eastern kind of spices. It had a nice kick, really flavorful. It was incredible. And then I thought, okay, we're done. But then he came out with this beautiful dish. It was circles of marinated tempeh, marinated just to perfection, and inside smashed potatoes, sitting on a bed of an Espanol sauce, which is a dark sauce, so flavorful, so light, so lovely, and it came with roasted vegetables and a Indian eggplant. It was just incredible. And then we finished up with the cannolis. It was an amazing meal, and I just couldn't believe how it just all happened. Now, there are many, many people who either aren't interested in cooking or don't know how to cook. And like anything else, like learning to crawl or walk or run, it takes energy, it takes time, but anybody can learn. And that's one of our motives at Responsibility in Living, is to give you lots of ideas, lots of encouragement, because we all need to eat. You know, it's not like you can say, okay, I'm not interested in this because I don't eat. We all eat, right? I know there are some people that are so busy that they don't care what they eat and they just want it to be efficient, but I believe the most of what we do in life should be enjoyable. And if we're going to eat, shouldn't it be food that's delicious and nutritious? That's what we're offering you. So that was our Passover and Easter. Now, one of the things that I want to mention, maybe you noticed when I was talking about the gefilte fish, that I said it was made from almonds. Almonds are getting a bad rap these days. You know about the California drought, and most media are listing almonds at the top of the bad list for using so much water, and water being a precious commodity, they're pointing the finger at almonds as the bad agricultural food. And I haven't had a moment to dig into the numbers, but I do know that almonds are not the evilest of culprits. And I don't want to point fingers at almonds. I want to point fingers at, you know what I'm going to say, I want to point fingers at cattle, and especially in California. So they grow a lot of alfalfa and corn to make animal feed. And not all of that animal feed feeds cows in California. Some of it goes to China. It's crazy. So there's all this water being used to grow plants, to feed animals, to ultimately feed people, some of them in California, some of them across the country, some of them in other countries. And California's running out of water. The first thing that I would do is say, stop the cattle. It's so inefficient. And to grow plants to feed animals that sucks up all of this water inefficiently, it's the easiest thing to solve the problem. We'll see how that all spins out. Nobody's talking about it, at least nobody in the media world that gets a lot of attention, right? We're talking about it right now. That's what I would do. And, irks me. Does it irk you? It irks me to know that some of this animal feed isn't even staying within the United States. It's like shipping water outside of the United States, shipping all these foods that are grown here as California runs out of water and shipping it somewhere else to feed animals inefficiently, to feed people. Doesn't make any sense. Now, here's a question I have for you. When you visit a website, can you tell me this? Do you like when you get to the website and as soon as you get there, a screen pops up that you're not interested in that asks you to subscribe or do something or check something out? I just want to know, do you like that? I don't like it, but I just want to know, do people like that? We don't have that at responsibilityandliving.com. Maybe we should. I don't know, but it doesn't work for me. Let me know. Let me know what you think about anything. info@realmeals.org is my email, and I'd love to hear from you about that or about just about anything else. Let's see. Another thing. Oh, I wanted to talk about two things that I read in the news that I thought were kind of interesting, classic scenarios of humanity. Did you read the recent article? I saw it in the New York Times. I imagine it must be in other places. But people can purchase breast milk online, ultimately, I believe, to feed babies. And they're finding that 10% of some of the breast milk that have been randomly tested contains cow's milk. This I find so... I'm not shocked, because people will do just about anything, but another very sad scenario with humanity and people trying to make a buck. Now, many times people purchase or try and find breast milk for their babies for a number of different reasons, because the mother cannot provide the milk and because the baby may be sensitive to cow's milk formulas and soy milk formulas, and they can only consume human breast milk. And then they buy it, and it has cow's milk in it. It's just obscene. I go nuts when I read things like this. And if you've seen my chocolate report, and if you haven't, I encourage you to go to responsibilityandliving.com and watch it. That's one of the things we talked about with chocolate. So you may have heard chocolate has cadmium and lead in it, depending on where it comes from, at limits that are above allowable limits. Limits that can be toxic, especially to children. Cocoa, unfortunately, can be harvested in the Ivory Coast using child slavery. Very, very devastating. And then the other thing is that the FDA found dairy in many chocolates that said they didn't have dairy. And we learned a few weeks ago that the chocolate machines are hard to clean. So when somebody's making a non-dairy chocolate on a machine that has made dairy chocolate, it's just really hard to get all that dairy out of there. And for people that are sensitive to dairy, have extreme intolerances and could make them very ill, they have to avoid any amount of dairy in their food. And there are many chocolate foods, and now we're learning other foods that say they contain no dairy, but they do. And what do we do about that? Well, as I often love to quote my dad, if you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem, and the way to eliminate it is for humans to stop exploiting animals and stop making milk from cows. If we didn't make any cow milk, then nobody would worry about being allergic to it or getting it in their purchased online human breast milk or in their chocolate, etc. That's my solution. Who's listening? Well, thank you for listening very much. I appreciate it, and I would love to hear from you at info@realmeals.org. Please send me a note, and please come to my birthday party. Put it on your calendar, April 22nd, Wednesday, here in New York in Forest Hills, Queens, the number one travel destination for 2015. Come and see why. That's all now. I'm done. Very good. Thanks for listening. And remember, have a delicious week.